You're listening to Spitball with Adri Ballhawk Mellows and Marcus Innuendo Bingo Henson.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Conference Championship episode of Spitball. I'm your host, Adri Ballhawk Mellows. Joining me this week, as always, is my co-host,
Marcus Innuendo Bingo Henson.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, guys. I'm good. I hope you guys out there are good as well. It might be raining, it's snowing wherever you are. Horrible weather. I've got sideways rain at the moment, but we can always come together and talk about football.
Yeah, and what a great weekend of action it was with both conference games. A tale of two stories, really, when you look at both games, and that is exactly what we will do when we come back from this break, our recap of this weekend's conference championship games.
The Super Bowl is defined by spectacular plays, and those that have the longest staying power are often the longest runs. From time to time, for some teams, lightning strikes twice.
He's gone! Touchdown!
He'll hand off to Smith. Timmy Smith from 58 yards!
As time passes, those plays and players grow in stature. Throughout Super Bowl history, familiar faces have risen to the moment. Even if it means rising and running in the opposite direction. With another super stage on the verge of being set, who will join them in a run for immortality?
We start this week's roundup with the New England versus Denver game at Mile High Stadium in Denver. Marcus, where do you want to start with this game?
Oh my word, how great was this? Edge of the seat stuff. Brady Manning 17, how they pinned it up. It really was kind of weird, wasn't it, to see that first quarter. We've seen Manning the last couple of weeks be really shaky and missing passes. Brady, on the other hand, has been on form and like completing everything. Role reversal.
Yeah, and although he had a good first quarter, Manning, there was still a few big opportunities for points that Manning did miss in this game, either by overthrowing a receiver or picking the wrong receiver to throw to, like when he went for Sanders in the end zone when he had Owen Daniels wide open in the middle, like just inside the red zone. I thought that was a big moment, and those throws that he missed in the end zone, they ended up not really mattering, but at the same time, you know, if they would have got them, it would have made the game a lot easier. I think, although it was Brady versus Manning 17, I'm sure you'll agree that this game was dominated by both defenses.
Oh, astutely, especially second half, you have to definitely give it to New England. They made the adjustments to really sort of suffocate Denver in the second half. And again, what was that? Pressure. Getting in Manning's face. Man, he just looked so slow. He did have one run for like 12, 13 yards, got himself first down, but apart from that, he just looked so uncomfortable in that pocket.
It was quite funny, wasn't it, that at one point that both teams' longest runs were a run from the quarterback. Both Manning and Brady ran over 10 yards for first downs on third downs.
Well, Brady's was. Brady's was the longest Patriots run of the night, what with James White and Steven Jackson both like playing more sort of short yardage sort of game plans. It seemed weird, but at the same time, we've come to expect this from the Denver defense. And of course, for me, they're holding the Patriots to less than 50 rushing yards. You know, that was kind of a given. What I think really sort of let Patriots back into the game as they were sort of getting him in Brady's face. A lot of the time it was those silly penalties when you just like illegal contact downfield or holding, where I can understand what they're doing. You know what? They got physical. They got in Gronk, Edelman's, Amendola's face. All right. They put pressure on Brady so he'd throw those two picks. Both those picks came from basically having a defender about to just steamroll him. But it was the contact downfield. I get it. You're trying to put pressure on. You're trying to like rough these guys up. You know, you're here to play. This is Bronco football. But you know what? You've got to play it smart. Yeah. When can you get away with it? When can you not? Definitely not right in front of a ref.
Yeah, it's true. The penalties were a big factor, but I mentioned earlier that Manning missed a few big opportunities for points, but at the same time as well, in that second half, we did have Brady missing James White a few times on what would have been big receptions, and even a touchdown pass as well. So he missed a few big opportunities, and I want to come back to Denver's defense and just say I thought that their game plan was first class.
Don't get me wrong, Brady missed a couple of shots but you give the credit to that Broncos D. They're the ones who get the credit there in my book. You held them to two fourth downs in that fourth quarter to prevent the comeback. All right. And really, that pass to Gronk for that final touchdown. I mean, to be fair, Gronk had no business catching that. He was perfectly covered. I mean, there's not much more you can do. And then holding off the two-point conversion, textbook.
Yeah, and I think a lot can be said more about how great the Gronk is, that despite the Denver defense playing lockdown football, Gronk still came away with over 140 yards, but a lot of that was late in the fourth quarter. He even had that massive catch on fourth down in between two defenders, which I thought was just insane. I mean, the confidence you must have in a receiver to throw the ball 30 yards down the field when he's essentially splitting the two defenders that are marking him. Perfect throw. But coming back to Denver defense, Von Miller, Malik Jackson, Derek Wolf all owned that game. They sacked Brady four times. They're into double figures as a unit for the amount of hurries and knockdowns they had on Brady. Credit where credit's due. Denver deserved to win that game.
They knew their opponent. They scouted well. More importantly, they delivered on the field on the day.
Yeah, even when they had their backup safeties in, to a degree, they were still holding that Patriots offense to sort of third and fourth down plays during their final drive. So I think we will leave that one there and remind you that the score was Denver 20, New England 18. Now we know the AFC champions that are Denver. On to the NFC between Arizona and Carolina.
Well, I mean, what can you say? You know, we just made a big shout out to the Broncos defense and like kudosing and bigging them up. Well, you know what? Rightly so, because defenses win championships. And you know what? Carolina's got a defense that could do just that. Seven takeaways for the Panther defense. Are you kidding me?
No, that actually happened. Can you believe it? In a conference championship game, I don't think I've ever seen that many turnovers.
No, I mean, to be fair, you got to hand it to them because the pressure built. They're 17-0 down at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think it was a tale of two quarterbacks, wasn't it? We said Cam Newton has just been absolutely on fire, whereas Carson Palmer the last couple of weeks, he's just really struggled when the pressure's been on him, and I guess more on his shoulders than anyone else is trying to move that offense, because Carolina were able to shut down the run game of David Johnson.
Yeah, while of course establishing theirs, that was the critical key for me. Newton and that sort of that option play worked to a treat. And of course now you saw it, the fact that they were able to just throw stuff in, just completely confuse Arizona. I know you have man of the match. I have to give that to Cam, but still, a silver medal for a man of the match, it's got to be taken. Yeah, or Luke Kuechly. I think they can split it, really.
Yeah, honorable mentions,
special teams. Oh yeah, honorable mentions, yes.
And well, on the Ted Ginn front, actually, you brought me on nicely onto a point I'd written down myself, and it was after the Patrick Peterson interception. He's running down the field. He's about 30 yards away from scoring, and who's hustled at least 50 yards to make a tackle on him? Ted Ginn Jr. What happens on the next play after Ted Ginn's made that touchdown-saving tackle? Kurt Coleman picks off Carson Palmer and completely changes the game. That's why you should always hustle to make the tackle.
Absolutely. And yeah, give it to Kurt Coleman because he laid out to like stretch and bring that interception in. It's how critical these sort of like these sudden plays are, and sort of pick six compared to just an interception. An interception just goes down on the stat sheet at the end of the day. Points from turnovers. That's the key. Points from turnovers.
That's it. And if Peterson had gone into the end zone, it would have been a pick six. It would have been a massive momentum shift, and the game could have gone on to have a completely different complexion. But this is why, you know, you stress to all the young players out there, never ever give up on a play. If you stop someone a yard away from the end zone, even if it takes all your energy, this is what the defense wants you to do. Give them a chance to make a play. Don't let people score easy touchdowns.
And speaking about that, and defense not letting easy touchdowns, how about Luke Kuechly? I mean, you can't say any more about that man.
Not really. He had another pick six in this game, didn't he? I mean, we mentioned a few weeks ago that we think he's probably the best all-round linebacker in the game, and the way he's performing in the playoffs, I don't think anyone would doubt that.
How about Larry Fitzgerald only having four completions for 30 yards? That's taking a guy out of the game. That's taking an offensive weapon out of the game.
Yeah, 100%. And is there a better quarterback in the league than Cam Newton right now on current form?
No. No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No. No. No, 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 hell no.
The guy's got it all. He can run the ball. You throw the ball. He's got bullet. I mean, you saw that on the pass to, I can't think of.
Not the one to Philly Brown.
I receive his name. Philly Brown, that's it. Thank you. Literally, you see that. He like delivers that with some serious mustard, and it needs to be. Philly Brown catches it in stride. That allows him to beat the defender and then go run it in. But at the same time, he's smart enough. I think he's got to the point where he's matured enough. Like a fine wine, Cam Newton's got to the point where he's at his perfection.
there's a few Seahawks fans I was reading earlier that would disagree with that just because he tore down a 12-man flag in the game last week. But yet at the same time, while they're slating Cam Newton for being classless, I can guarantee you that if Richard Sherman or Cam Chancellor ripped down a Panthers flag in their stadium, they would have nothing but praise for him. So it was just quite funny to read, really, to be honest with you. And with that, we're going to put highlights of both conference championships in the show notes. And when we come back, we'll have a look ahead to the Pro Bowl and Super Bowl.
Newton has some time. Now he's flushed out, starts to run. He is knocked down. Here comes the rush. Heads left. They got him again. They sack him. And Super Mario, Mario Williams with his second sack of the
game. That's what I'm talking about. Close the distance on them, then bang a move. Don't waste your time and get. That's how you get in the pressure. Good job.
He dropped by Cam Newton from a well-formed pocket. Anchors it end zone, and it's caught. Touchdown, Ted Ginn Jr.
You having fun?
I love it.
That's what it's all about.
Love it.
You are listening to Spitball.
So we come on now to the look ahead to the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl. I know myself and Marcus have been having a few discussions recently about the Pro Bowl and about its pros and cons for the fact that it's now played before the Super Bowl. We'd love to know what you think. Remember,
hey guys, if you want to get a hold of Audrey or Marcus, send them an email at ballhawksnest@gmail.com.
Or you can tweet us at ballhawksnest, at Adrie Mallows, or at Marcus_innuendo and use the hashtag SpitballProBowl. Now, Marcus, maybe you can enlighten our fans on what your thoughts are about the Pro Bowl being played before the Super Bowl.
It would have been a rest week. It was what would we have done? With a week off with no football? What would we have done?
I have no idea, but I'll tell you what, this is my only problem with it, and it can be solved, so we have a solution for this as well, because we don't just like to come up with problems, we like to come up with solutions. But my biggest problem with it is that there are so many players selected for the Pro Bowl that won't get to play because they're in the Super Bowl now. There is 14 players that have been picked for the Pro Bowl that need to be replaced. There's 10 Panthers players and 4 Broncos. Like I say, they all need to be replaced, meaning that fans haven't voted for 14 players that come in as replacements as their first choices. So people aren't going to get to see the players they want in the Pro Bowl, and the players generally want to get to the Super Bowl rather than the Pro Bowl. So solution is that you have to have a vote on, say, Monday and Tuesday, the week after the last conference game. We have the power to do this now. We have technology. Fans can vote in that space of time. If they know they've only got 2 days, you're just going to get more votes, and the NFL have got the resources to count those votes. And then you can announce the players and draft them on the same day. You can announce them in the morning, draft them on the Wednesday, get them out there on the Thursday. It's a holiday game anyway, so, you know, they'll have plenty of time to get out to Hawaii and have a little break. They can have their holiday afterwards, but that's, for me, the only way you can realistically do it. Or you say that teams that reach the playoffs can't be voted for or are ineligible for the Pro Bowl. What do you reckon?
Nah, I don't think that so much, because of course the Pro Bowl is supposed to be like, you know, best of the league and stuff, so I think a lot of the time they're going to come from those playoff teams. I think a lot of time, like you said, maybe, you know, we've got the technology nowadays. I can pick up my phone and I can just, like, if I need to go on a poll on NFL, I go on NFL.com and I can select the poll. It's done. It's like 2 seconds of my day. Or even if they sent you, you know, sent out an email and I just click a link on the email, it should be a lot easier to sort of, like, when you're selecting your Pro Bowl, I'll select this guy to be my first choice, this guy to be my second choice, and this guy to be my third choice. So if first and second don't get in, I got third, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And well, I suppose they kind of do that, because you do normally get 2 or 3, votes per position, don't you? But then that's to cover both conferences.
Yeah, so there you go. So I mean, that's another way you could do it when you have like multiple choice.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're both very good suggestions. And with that though, we're going to leave the Pro Bowl talk there. That's obviously going to be played in Hawaii this Sunday. Kicks off at midnight for us here in the UK. We're going to come on to the Super Bowl, the big one, Super Bowl 50. And what matchups are you looking forward to the most, Marcus?
You have a Broncos defense that held Patriots to under 50 yards rushing. So that's impressive. And they're going to have to work on stopping that run option game. However, on the flip side, you've got a Panthers defense that took away 7 takeaways, getting pressure on Carson Palmer against a Denver offense that only had 176 pass yards. Like you said, all those opportunities wasted. I can definitely see a better defense like Carolina some of those mistakes, if you're not careful, they're going to turn into picks.
Yeah, and potentially pick sixes as well.
Absolutely. That's their forte this year.
I'm looking forward to seeing how Cam Newton handles that Denver defense and all the different schemes they put in place, because they were the number one ranked defense in the NFL this year for a reason. And it'll be interesting to see if Cam's got the talent. I'm sure he has the confidence at the moment to be able to recognize what the defense is doing, and if he can tear it apart in the same way he did, obviously, the Cardinals defense. And we know that there'll be times where the outside is uncovered and it's just man on man, Ted Ginn Jr. against one of those cornerbacks. Will he be able to set fire to the turf and scorch him for a six? Who knows? One question I do have for you, though, is does Cam Newton need a Super Bowl ring to get into the Hall of Fame?
You look at his portfolio already. I mean, he's got the Heisman win, of course, got the national championship win. Cam Newton has got possibly another 6, 7, 8 years left, you know. I think at the moment, Panthers can sit there and, you know, keep him sweet, because I think you've got like the franchise quarterback to set yourself up for another couple of years. You hold a dominant defense, get yourself a little dynasty going on. So yeah, I think this could be the start of something. Whether or not he actually wins the actual Super Bowl this year, or whether Manning gets his hand on another one, I don't think it's going to be as problematic, because you know what? I think we could be talking 12 months time, we could be talking about Panthers going probably back to Super Bowl again. They keep this core group of players because they're just so dominant.
And just to kind of come back to Cam Newton, I just want to kind of give you a few things. That the reason why I asked the question is because he's a three-time Pro Bowler. He's won NFL Offensive Player of the Year this year, I guess for the obvious reasons. He was the touchdown leader this year. That's most total touchdowns, I believe. When you look at his rookie year, he was the Rookie of the Year. He was the Offensive Rookie of the Year. His rookie records include most total yards by a rookie quarterback at 4,799, most total touchdowns by a rookie player, 35, 21 pass, 14 rushing, first rookie quarterback in NFL history to throw for 4,000 yards, first rookie to throw for 10 touchdowns and run for 10 touchdowns, first rookie to throw 400 plus yards in his first career game, second most passing yards by a rookie in a season, second most rushing yards by a rookie quarterback, second most passing yards by a rookie in a game. The list kind of goes on and on, really, about all the different records he's had, bearing in mind he's only been in the league since 2011. So, I mean, this is why I think that obviously the ring would help. But at this point in time, if he keeps going the way he is, I think he's in.
I don't think, you know, having the ring on his finger is going to matter, because we're going to look back in 10 years' time and he's going to have a glittering career, so even if he hasn't ever got the ring. Because, I mean, you know, there's still some greats out there who never got the chance, you know, get the ring.
Yeah, and it all comes down on Super Bowl Sunday in a couple of weeks' time to old versus new, essentially. We have the old hand in Peyton Manning and the new hand, no pun intended, as they're both quarterbacks, in Cam Newton.
I'm eating burritos bigger than you. It's time to go eat, baby.
Let's eat.
You got some hungry dogs over here.
Apple!
Orange! Orange!
Hot potato.
I don't want no crackers!
Hungry, man.
I gotta eat it.
Feed him, he hungry.
Man, you guys didn't eat your Wheaties this morning, did you?
We eating all day, bro.
We'll ground these guys up and turn them into little bitty eagle meatballs.
We come on now to our weekly impact
player
and our
swing.
Marcus, I'm pretty confident we haven't got the same person this week, but as always, I'm going to give you the choice. Would you like to go first or second?
I am going to be nice and let you go first.
Oh, well, that's jolly nice of you, old chap. Thank you very much. Yes, the bribe is in the my impact
player
is probably going to get some abuse, but I have gone with Wade Phillips, defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. The way he mastered that defense, they're number one in the league this year against the Patriots and against Brady. Brady had absolutely no time at all, as I mentioned earlier. The hurries and the knockdowns were both in double figures, which was just ridiculous. Four sacks, two interceptions, and held their run game to just 44 yards.
What do you say? I mean, that is, it's just number one defense.
Exactly. That's all you can say. So we move on to yours, sir.
With yours being way out to left field, I mean, mine's pretty much straight as now as you can guess. Can you guess it?
What your impact
player?
It depends whether you've gone offense or defense, I suppose, doesn't it, really, as to whether I'd be able to guess it or not. But I'm going to say Cam Newton.
No, come on. The guy's called Superman for a reason. He showed it this weekend. I mean, come on. We're talking 335 yards through the air and two touchdowns. And let's put that with his 47 yards on the ground and another two touchdowns. Guy puts points on the board. He gets fans engaged. He's got his teammates believing in him. These guys would follow him to hell and back. Hell, I'm pretty sure after a 5-minute conversation with him, I would too.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he had another great game this week against the Cardinals. And he really is, as we mentioned earlier, on fire at the moment. So we'll move swiftly on now to our Super Bowl. Who are you taking, Marcus?
Again, I'm guessing I'm playing the obvious game here, but I've got to go for Carolina with a 60-40 swing. We're talking 10 to 17 points. They're going to take this up. I don't expect them to embarrass them like they did Arizona. It's going to be a good game. We've got some good defenses, but unfortunately, Superman's going to, you know, show him why he is so super.
Well, much though I would like to agree with you, I can't even keep myself on that one. I always like to disagree with you. I think everyone that listens knows that. I am actually going with Denver to win the Super Bowl on a 55-45 swing by 3 points or less. You know why, Marcus? Tell them why.
I wouldn't know, but I'm guessing you're going to say that basically it's going to come down to probably what, a 12-9 game or something like that, super defensive.
Yep, and what's that lovely phrase I enjoy when it comes to defense?
They win championships.
There you have it.
Spanhead Productions are a small independent sound recording company based in rural Hertfordshire. We specialise in creating content for all your podcasting needs, whether it be field recordings, Fox Pops, or capturing the atmosphere during social events. Editing is a very time-consuming job, so Spanhead Productions are on hand to take away some of the burden for you. Just advise us on how you'd like your content to sound, and we will do the rest. We can even help you design and manage a website for your podcast too. Visit us now, spanheadproductions.weebly.com. That's spamheadproductions.weebly.com.
Well, that wraps it up from us for another week. All that remains is for me to thank our producer, Mark Taylor from Spamhead Productions, my amazing co-host, Marcus. As always, it's been a pleasure, and I can't believe it's going to be 2 weeks until our next show, because we don't do one for the Pro Bowl. So it'll be after the Super Bowl where we come back to our lovely listeners.
I know. Adios, amigos.
If you want to get in touch with us, guys, remember.
Hey, guys, if you want to get a hold of Audrey or Marcus, send them an email at ballhawksnest@gmail.com.
And we are also contactable on Twitter at Adrian Mallows, at BallHawksNest,
and at Marcus_innuendo.
Don't forget we are downloadable on iTunes. And until after the Super Bowl, football fans, stay safe, take care, and thanks for stopping by.